Static.
Okay.
Yeah, we're good.
Okay, we are going to begin our work session of the City Council of the City of Cedarville. It's Tuesday, May 18th, 2021.
No.
Year 2021, and it is 6:11. Do you not hear me, Greg? All right, and the first item on our work session agenda is a discussion on legislative issues with Representative Greg Graham. Representative, thank you for being with us this evening.
That's wonderful to be here.
Take it away.
So I don't have some grand presentation for you. Mostly it's just to check in, make sure that you know that you can contact me with needs that you see. You know, I was talking to several of the council members that because we don't have a lot of, we have SR92 running through this district, and there's not a lot of other state roads. And so the amount of needs that are coming up to the legislative side are less in this district than most districts. You know, we're not intersected by multiple freeways and, you know, things like that. But one of the things that Councilmember Smith talked about was local control versus legislative control. And specific as to the ADUs and HB 82, which was a Representative Ford bill. Now, so that we're clear, I voted for that. I voted for it in committee, and I voted for it in the House. And there's some reasons for that. But before I voted for it, I tracked down Representative Ford at the beginning, and I said, look, you are going to have some significant problems with the cities, you know, no matter what, but at the very minimum, you have to account for parking appropriately in your bid. And it's like no one ever talked to him about that. And so he's like, well, why? I said, well, you've got to look for off-street parking, and you need to at least give them some discretion on that, because that goes to the aesthetics of what they're trying to build within their communities. And one of the principles that we're looking at with the ADUs is, okay, at what point does a private property owner control who's in their home or not? You know, from a broader, and how much should the government be able to control what is in their personal residence and who can be in their personal residence? And so there's a different framework on a legislative side, on a state level, than maybe on a city level, as far as you're probably going to have, because cities are not partisan, that private property issue is going to be a highlighted issue for a conservative partisan agenda. And to say that that's not a problem, you know, or it is not accentuated even more than it would be at a city level is probably naive. It plays a huge part of that. But the other thing is, every single report that we're getting is we have a crazy housing shortage. We are struggling to deal with in-migration. We have a pandemic that is resulting in huge amounts of in-migration from out of state that we're not able to adequately measure right now, but we can feel and we can see in our housing prices and inflation for housing prices going up tremendously. So I don't think that they were contemplating all of those when they opened the bill. But as the legislation is going, as the legislature is going through things, or I guess leading into the legislative session, we're seeing all of those impacts coming into the state, and we're looking at it and we're saying, okay, well, right now, in 1980, the average person per household was at about 4.3 people per house. And right now we're down to about 3.82, I think is what I'm at. I may be off on some of the, you know, but it was about 3.8-ish. And if we do this, we anticipate it will go to between a 4.1 and a 4.2 per household. And it will alleviate, at least on a short-term basis, a lot of the housing problems that we're facing. And I don't think it's not a magic bullet, it's a Band-Aid. We're dealing with that statewide, and the other issue is it was an override of local control. I don't think there's any ifs, ands, or buts about it. It was. But at some level, we have to look at what are the pressures on the local control, and the pressures for an elected official in a city level office is always to conform to the existing residents and not to the statewide public policy. And because you're going to hear it from the neighbor. And so it puts you in a very difficult position to increase your zoning. And so that was kind of the confluence of factors on ADUs that were coming together. One bit of feedback that I would say that was frustrating to the legislature and probably prevented at least the League of Cities and Towns from getting as much as they could have in negotiating that, was the League of Cities and Towns has their legislative management committee, is what they call it. But the problem is they're not, things move faster than that committee can consider. And if you don't empower your representative, whether it's a lobbyist or someone else, to make the decisions and to make the deals that they need to fast enough, they're not going to be able to respond and get the better deals that they can. If they have to go back to their committee every time, it slows everything down, and it created a frustration to where at one point in the Business and Labor Committee, which I was on, and they were presenting this bill, first of all, Ray Ward had the votes for it without any concessions. And second, the concessions that were being asked for were perceived as being unreasonable because there wasn't enough discretion for the representative, or the, in this case, the lobbyist, to read the room. He knew what the room was, but he wasn't able to move fast enough. And it created a scenario where you had a member of House leadership yelling at the League of Cities and Towns from across the room, saying how unreasonable they were. And it didn't play as well as it probably could have. And I don't blame Cameron Gillis, who was normally representing the league. I don't blame him for that. I kind of blame a process that was set up to try to, the league has so many different voices in different sized cities with different interests and everything. So it's hard to, that's a lot of cats to herd. But they need to herd them better and herd them earlier. And they need to empower their representative to make decisions that they feel are best for the league. And it's probably not going to be as democratically done throughout the session as they may be really trying to do. So there's a little bit of feedback for the cities to do a little better on getting what they want. So I hope that answers at least the ADU portion.
Okay.
There will always be a tension between local and statewide issues. And for as much as it sometimes seems, the ADU issue, for many cities, it was the legislature doing a work that they knew was probably correct from a policy standpoint, but difficult to do from a political standpoint on a local level. And sometimes that's our role. We're really good at being the bad guy. And we kind of have to be a lot of times. So if there's like a really unpopular issue that we do need to deal with, the legislature is a great place to do it because the approval ratings overall for the legislature are not, we expect them to be pretty crappy. And, it's kind of the way that it is. But if we're doing our job and staying in contact with our constituents and staying in contact with our districts and cities within those districts, and doing it in a way that at least protects their interests, then we can do those kind of those dirty jobs that are not fun to deal with, and we can take that, whereas the governor may not be willing to do that because it's a single person, approval rating. And so I don't know if that helps explain some of that, but
that helps a lot. Do you feel like the possible mask ban tomorrow that's in that same category?
So that was put on by the governor. That was actually asked for by him. I think that the possible mask ban tomorrow, and I think it will go through, there's a lot that has happened with the Salt Lake City School District specifically that was more than just irresponsible in what they did and how they responded to things. And it hurt sensitive populations in a way that will take years and years to overcome. The refusal to have in-person class after a certain point was a refusal that hurt our most sensitive populations, both in terms of economics and race, in our most sensitive school district, where we needed that. And, you know, in every single way, the support structure of school was built for that school district, and they were refusing, and their board was not just, it wasn't just a policy decision, it was almost like a vindictive and dysfunctional board against the parents, no matter what happened. And when they looked at the grammar requests and everything else, on the communications between that, those board members, it was an absolute nightmare. And there's part of the issue with the mask mandates is that, you know, there's a point where, you know, masking has some benefit. The benefit and the horror of having to wear a mask have both been overblown beyond what ever should have been. And it's turned into a partisan game of either not wearing your mask in a you know, show of virtue, or wearing your mask in a show of virtue, as opposed to what are the actual facts on the ground? What are we seeing? Are we going to need? And we're not seeing any, I don't know that an outright ban is fully appropriate. If you're just talking about are they going to make the rules based upon the conditions on the ground, and we're seeing efforts where they don't want to make the rules based on the conditions on the ground, but they want to make the rules based on this shows that we're more, you know, ideologically pure. Now, let's not kid ourselves. We are in a conservative state, and they're probably not going to do the same thing if it was a Republican side deciding to be more ideologically pure. Okay, I don't think that's, you know, to pretend that politics is not full of hypocrisy would probably be a little short-sighted. But the fear is that in the fall, well, we're not seeing, but with the impact of the vaccines, we're not seeing that there will be a need in the fall. And we don't want that to be a game that is played throughout the summer, to where parents are doing things. And if they do play that game, what we have already seen is that the enrollment numbers for those schools will drop. And that will negatively impact those districts for years and years and years. Whereas if we take it off the table, it's just a variable that we can add back in if it's a necessary health issue. You know, we're consulting with the health department to say, are you going to need a mask mandate in the fall? There's a problem. We don't see it at this point. But if there's, for example, the Grant School District or Salt Lake City School District were to say, we are requiring masks in the fall no matter what happens, you're going to get a percentage of their enrollment just drop. And then their funding dies, and their teachers get fired, and it turns into this horrible spiral. And so while it may seem like this grand conspiracy to like stop them, you know, there's a funding component behind that that I think is very real, that people just won't, like, we're worried about people going back to the public school system. And so we're trying to, you know, get back to normal because the funding depends on you getting back to normal. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that helps. I don't want to get one out of the question.
One thing that we did run this last year, it didn't get through, but it did have a very positive impact. As you're looking out over there, the Utah Lake, you know, we're trying to get some resources to the lake. We haven't had a unified group to fight for. There's a group that fights for the lake. There's several that fight for the lake. They don't have the authority to actually do a whole lot, and they don't have the money and resources to make much of a difference. And so we're trying to solve those problems. And we didn't, it's one of those things where you take a running start and you know you're gonna hit a brick wall. So I took a running start, I hit a brick wall, but I made the building shake enough that now they're taking it seriously, and we're working on it over the summer, and I do think that we'll be get something passed for the creation of the Utah Lake Authority, which will bring substantial resources towards the lake and put a focus on improving the lake to be closer to what it could be. In the process of doing that, this is the only time I've seen it, we were able to obtain $20 million for the lake on a bill that didn't pass. And that was because of a lot of work by our Utah County Caucus. So all of the members of the caucus, having people in leadership, strategically making that happen. I don't know that we've ever gotten much more than between $500 million for the lake. We got $20 million now. 10 of that is operating $20 million. 10 of that is put into an account for some applications related to water remediation. So that's more of like a, we're going to allocate this to hold as collateral for a federal application. But the 10 that's operating is a pretty substantial amount for the lake. It includes $1 million for algal remediation, $1 million for invasive species remediation, even out there, they have the red varieties. It includes about $2.7 million for marina upgrades, and it includes $4.4 million for the establishment of the Wakara Way Park, including trails and access. And that will tie into the trail system around the lake, but also into the bridge that goes over UVU. So you'll have a direct connection for all the UVU students to go down and enjoy the lake areas. And it should be the Wakara Way project is pretty cool. It's I think it's like 1,000 acres of protected lands that should provide a really cool environmental benefit.
So I have a question about that. I did sit on the lake commission board and Kelly sits in it right now.
Yeah.
So I know one of our concerns was that when the roll call was made of who gets to sit on the new commission, like Linden wasn't on there. They own land. They have a shop or whatever. And so moving that down there. So my concern for Kelly's too is that some of us, we're not even going to be on the board anymore. We're booted out. Even though we can see it, we don't own land there, so we're not important enough to be on the board. But my concern was that local control being taken away. Yes, the money's great and all of that, but I think for a long time we felt like this is, are they going to know that the state can get it and not the county? That's my big fear is that these people who have worked for years and did all they could with what resources yeah. they had feel like they're being kicked to the curb on that.
Well, so the hard part on the board is how big of a board can you get, how many people can you get on it? And Linden wasn't necessarily kicked to the curb. They wouldn't have had a voice on the initial one. But there's a few different models that we have. Because you want to have some that are from the surrounding community that maybe don't have land. And those would be appointed through the Council of Governments or Republican Act or COG here, right?
Yeah.
So there were certain positions that were to be appointed by COG. And in fact, on the second draft, I believe Linden was put back in on that. But there's a few different models. One is, okay, if you divide the lake north and south, and you say, okay, there's six cities that sit on the north side, and there's four that sit on the south. If you said this board needs to have four board members that are from the north, six, and three that are from the south, four, or something like that, however you want to divide it up. That's a way, there's lots of ways to skin a cat. The reality, and I can tell you that right now, as it comes to actual decision making, there is little to any local control on Utah Lake. And if you're talking about what you can actually do, there's very little local control. There's a lot of locals on the board, and there's a lot of locals that show up to board meetings, but the size of the board is so big that when others do care about an issue on the lake and have a defensive interest, they all jump in too, and then your voice has very little merit on what can happen. Not merit, but value, because you're incremental there. And so it's, I don't know that there's going to be a board solution that is, perfect. Because at the same time that you're wanting local control, I have probably 30 other water related interests, they're really mad that they don't have a seat on the board, and they're mad that there's so much local control. You know, in the sense of locals that are around the lake.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I understand Lyndon's concern, and I listened to that and put them in, you know, and the, but the issue is, we want to maximize the local control for Utah County. It may not be perfect in how everyone wants, everyone's going to want a different way. But it's, we're trying to get as much control over Utah Lake as possible, you know, into Utah County. And we're tying the payment structure to the amount of control. So we're telling the water people, you know, we're willing to just say we can't impact your water rights. But you're going to have to believe us. If you don't believe us and you want to control things, then you're probably going to need to pay, you know, to contribute to the solution. And, you know, they're coming to grips with that. And, you know, in terms of, you know, what that payment solution would be, you know, it depends on how that, I don't know that I have every solution. We're trying to get some of the ARPA money to it. We're trying to, we're looking at trying to, I don't know if the water is flat, but we want to get in. There's a fund called the WIRA fund, the WIRA account, and I forget what it is, but it, or what the acronym stands for, like Water Infrastructure Redevelopment Act, you know, amendment or something like that. But that is 1/8 of a quarter of the sales tax goes into that fund. But we're trying to access some of that, and then, you know, there's likely going to be either a fee component to it that would be on a across a few different things that go into the lake, and we don't want the fee structure to be that lake structure. Like whoever we charge money from, it's your fault that the lake looks like that. I don't think that that's appropriate, and I don't think it's fair to anyone. Because the people that are around the lake now are pretty good actors. You know, the wastewater districts, there's cleaner water going in from them than the rest of it. You know, there's a lot of good, you know, good people that are doing good things. They've already been asked to do a lot. But as far as the fee structure, I can see something along the lines of a mix of stormwater and like a per connection sewer, something along those lines. It helps with the basic maintenance fee, and then you can go out for grants and one-time fees. You know, one-time, not fees, but one-time requests from the legislature to do water general structure issues, things like that.
So you're dealing with this in a special session?
No. This is, we'll be negotiating, I'm working on negotiating this throughout the interim entire, and then it'll be in the main session on this next year.
Well, we have about 5 more minutes. Does anybody else have
can I ask a question?
Please do.
I'm always curious as to what's coming up on the next legislative session. I'm not talking about special session that's starting now. I'm more thinking next year's general session. Where do you see the next development in housing going? What are you hearing as far as the next problems they're tackling? Because that always seems to be the hot button issue that gets cities riled up.
I think that we've seen this over the last 4 or 5 years addressing building code issues.
Mm-hmm.
I think the building code will continue to be a big part of it. And then I don't know that I haven't heard anything big on the housing issue. I wouldn't be surprised if there is something, but you know, this sounds crazy. There's a few bills that leadership will decide they want to do. Is kind of a push, but a lot of it is just each legislator has their ideas, and you bring it up and you hash it out and tell them how stupid their idea is, and you know, and then they fix it. There's order of that, you know, it's kind of, there's not as much coordination as people assume.
No, that does. On the building code, though, because in general, cities we just adopt the most recent, you know, IRC or and we follow that. I mean, are they trying to cherry pick, for lack of a better word, codes to not apply? And I know that this happened. This was actually, I think, a good thing with the ADU not requiring separate ductwork for an ADU. I like the idea of keeping it simple in terms of if you want to do an ADU to, you know, add value to your property, then this is a good thing. And I actually feel like by and large our city has adopted codes prior to the legislative session that were pretty much in line with what was passed. So there wasn't as much uproar other than the parking thing here, but I'm curious, when you talk about building codes, what are you hearing there?
So it's been I don't remember it coming up as much last year. I remember the 2 years, and I don't know specifically how they'll hook up to it, but what you end up with is there's a few legislators that really know building codes inside and out because that's their business. And they see what is, you know, and they're pretty good actors. Like, I don't think that they're trying to, like, they've made their money, they're done. And for the most part, they're out of their businesses on that. So, like, Mike Schultz, he knows the building stuff, but he sold his business. And, you know, I don't know that he's, you know, he may have an interest somewhere, but I don't think that's his driving factor. But he usually will identify a few building codes that are pretty onerous and that don't make a lot of sense. The other thing that he tends to focus on are licensing issues related to contractors and, you know, whether we're keeping people out of our workforce that could increase our supply of workers and lower the price for building. Because we are having a shortage of skilled labor in building all over the state. And so we'll see that, and that's going to be a push from the governor as well, our licensing guidelines. And that's kind of tied into building codes on the construction side. So I'm kind of addressing that. It's different, but
I understand.
Kind of along those lines.
Thank you.
But he's, I think, Governor Cox will be the next interim for business and labor to discuss deregulation, or at least not deregulation, but they look at all of our licensing because it's become quite onerous and figuring out what licenses we can accept from other states, you know, how to make the licenses congruent with what's actually needed to protect the citizens as opposed to what is needed to, we have a problem with our licensing where there's a phrase coined by Dwight D. Eisenhower. He's known for two things. But under God on the Pledge of Allegiance, and he coined the phrase the military-industrial complex. And I think that in Utah we have an educational industrial complex in the sense of licensing agencies that sit on the boards of the license of educational private businesses that sit on the boards of licensing agencies and require licensing to drive business to their schools. And it's become a pretty significant problem with a lot of lobbying money that goes in to maintaining that power of control. And so that was one of the first things that Governor Cox talked about, which I think is fantastic, because we've been trying to deregulate them, but we're fighting a very powerful lobby all the time. We kind of beat them up a lot on the cosmetology side this last time. But
that's one of the
keys. But yeah, the building side has some of that as well. And so I think that we'll see a lot of that on trying to increase the supply and decrease the cost of labor for building materials. So,
yeah. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jay. If you need anything, please reach out. It's pretty impossible to anticipate everything. It almost always requires a problem for me to, you know, be able to know what you need. And so I bring that up. And I like the city stuff. I'm very close with the other city managers. And you know, I'm an MPA grad. And, you know, if you know Brent Ivey, he's one of my best friends in the world.
Brent's a great guy.
If there's city-specific things, let me know.
We'll do.
You know, that are kind of more technical, I'm happy to jump in. Okay. All that. I'm trying to find him the right bill sponsor to deal with TRT issues with the county. And there may be a push to try to force a change in the county government. I've got to see where leadership is on that, because there's a few people that are, you know, I've been a long time advocate that our county government is not what it could be. And I ran a bill a few years ago that would have just put it on the ballot to say you need to either choose a council mayor or council manager, but your county of 700,000, having three people rule it all, this one great idea of, you know, Sauron over there, you know, it's not going to work. And doesn't work with our open and public meetings act issues, it doesn't work with our grammar issues, it's really pretty bad. And so there may be some movement on that. The politics need to be figured out before I'm going to commit to that again. So
yeah, I just wanted to say we appreciate collaboration. So if you see something too that you know is coming our way, so like if you get our feedback, you know, sometimes it feels a little blindsided, not enough time to check in with us all the time. But you know, anything we can help collaborate on, we'd love to. So maybe go with kind of here's how things feel about it, you know, we don't know just what else is
here. Yeah.
Have to say.
Yeah.
You know, same with the schools. I know, it's just nice to kind of work with a team, and I think we get more buy-in that way, and we work together better.
Yeah. And Jenny and I, Mayor Reese, prior to you, we would collaborate on certain things on leading up into the session, through the session, and I hope that any of you will reach out to me on that. If you hear something that's just, you know, that's bugging you, or that you need, you know, voice on, let me know. And she and I are continuing to collaborate. Her department, where she's now, I guess the official acronym is GOD, the Government Operations Director. I knew GOD was female. But her department is under my committee for funding purposes, and so we're working together all the time. You know, so I'm still in Paris, but. Anyways, reach out to me. Thanks so much. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. All right. Our next item on the agenda is a discussion on mural insulation along the Cedar Grove Trail.
So, interestingly enough, Mayor Anderson approached me about the idea of looking at our trail that goes under our metro that goes under Canyon Road and possibility of doing a mural there, one of the city murals that we did in DC. And because let's just face it, there's already murals being created there. We typically don't like the outcome of murals that are not city approved. So Mayor Anderson reached out to me, and honestly, just a couple days after, I had a gentleman reach out to me about the possibility of putting a mural there. And this is his email that he sent to me. I don't love the idea of the name, but I love the idea of maybe giving an opportunity to the local group to maybe make a proposal to the council on what they would like to see there. He's calling it the Tunnel of Tolerance. I think we can come up with something else. It's a little too cheesy for me, but that's just my
opinion. It might stick because it's so cheesy.
It might, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But I asked him when I got off the phone with him, I asked him to help. I said, hey, why don't you make a proposal for me that I can take to the council? And so I appreciate the time that he put into identifying the problem. He sees that there's already people there that put stuff, and it can be political in nature, divisive in nature, grotesque, and wildly inappropriate nature. It runs the whole gamut down there. But I do believe that in many cases where these kind of mural installations go up, there's a general respect for them. But at the same time, there are local groups. So you have, you know, art clubs, both more people that he's indicated he would collaborate with. And I like the idea of making a proposal. So I thought I'd bring this idea to you. And the last page, a few pictures he's taken, and now this is not the proposal, just to be clear. What I would ask them to do is to basically draw up what they want to paint, what they want to do on in the tunnel, and bring it to you for approval, to give you the thumbs up or a hey, let's go a different direction. But I want to get the temperature of where you guys sat on this idea. The tunnel just under here, just as it goes under the Canyon Road. I think one of the nice things is that if it's something that you ultimately hate, you can just paint over it. So, anyway.
All right.
What are your initial thoughts on this item?
So get Mike up to speed.
Oh, we have a proposal for an art installation to go into the tunnel here, the bike tunnel that's just over Canyon Road, to kind of maybe dissuade people from doing graffiti there, but a mural, basically.
Love it.
There's not a proposal for what it would look like, but that's what we're asking for. I would like them to, before just giving them a thumbs up, I'd like to say, hey, what are you going to paint?
Yeah.
It's nice and tasteful, and I don't want to infringe on artists, like, you know, I like a sketch, so I mean, you know.
I love sketch.
Well, on some level, I do believe that the city has to take ownership of it. So if we're giving them a thumbs up to do it, we'd be okay with what's there. So that's my big concern.
Who's doing it?
It's a gentleman named Ian Lane.
I love the idea.
Are we providing no paint or anything?
No.
What's the question?
We're not providing paint. We're not providing supplies. We're not providing anything.
100% if he wants to do it.
We're simply.
Like, if it's having experience.
And working with like a local club, like a local art club at Home Peak. So yeah, the city's simply just saying, this is a space you can use.
Yeah, and I think kids are probably gonna come up with a good idea. I mean, I think you put a bunch of creative kids together and they're gonna come up with a good idea. So I'm excited to see what they come up with.
I agree.
Yeah, I'd like to give them the autonomy to give us a proposal, you know, not dictate or maintain, but kind of the ability to.
Okay.
I mean, okay. We may not need to.
Do they have a theme? Do anybody know? I think
tunnel of tolerance.
What is it?
Tunnel of tolerance.
So kindness, unity.
Yeah. I don't. I've already stated I don't love the name, but I think I love the idea.
I like the idea of stuff that embraces the community. Maybe things about the community that are tolerant.
Yeah.
They're
saying no
welcoming
words too, so that you can interpret pictures that they want to talk about are too political, though.
It doesn't need to make a statement necessarily, just something that unifies without being political.
So, is the idea that the graffiti artists will tag because there's art there?
There's a hope there. And a lot of times you can coat these with something that will maybe they'll protect the base layer.
Maybe
wash off.
It works in big cities. When they do these installations, it really does cut down on tagging and stuff like that.
We already lost our opportunity to get an exact little severe jet spin.
I saw it on the Provo. It's a Bozak. Yeah.
Already?
He's got
endorsements. If it's done well, they can actually look really, really neat.
Yeah. So what's his timeline? When do you think?
I would just take the kind of what I'm hearing from you. Not too political. It's got to be pretty neutral in its ideas. We're very open to the proposal, but we want to see a mock-up of what it would look like before we do.
Not politically, not religious. It needs to be pretty generic.
Yeah.
Pretty variable. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. That's
kind of psychedelic.
Yeah.
It's all I have. Are there any items on the discussion on the agenda that you wanted to talk about?
Any questions?
Yeah. I mean, I know you bring it up with that box, but
not today.
Oh, you can't have that.
Wait, which lots of play? Doors?
No.
Two lots,
yeah. That's a pretty simple subdivision. It's in our 120,000 zone. It's almost 1.3 acres. It's creating two lots that are over a half acre each.
So, are there conditions on it? I like to make sure that you get a line of sight out of there.
Yeah. And, so, that's the big issue, is it's going to complete the sidewalk up to Cedar Hills Drive up to 4,000 West. And staff's big concern on that corner has always been opening up that corner, because there's just a lot of work.
Right. That's your guys' line on the line. I don't know if that's a condition.
So that has to happen. So, yes, it's
there. Is he planning on building there, Mr. Walker?
Yes, he's his grandfather's property. He's purchasing most of his building. It's a pretty easy subject. There's really no public opinions other than the site plan.
Thinking about our property that we own on the road, idea, so I told him. I'm sorry.
Oh.
It's item number 9, yeah.
It's not supposed to be that.
Yeah. So does anyone have any questions about any items that are going to be? Okay. Yeah. All right, thank you. Hi, Craig.
Denise.
I missed where the calendar, I didn't think you were going to start this up.
Oh, that's okay. We need to actually have a motion to adjourn our work session, if you would like to make that motion. I'll make the motion to adjourn the work session. Do you have a second?
Second.
Thank you, all in favor?
Aye.
Be adjourned. We'll resume in about 8 minutes.